This is a book. I just somehow think I, this a book that Mahbub Shwarskov did. He's also producing a lot of dances inspired by our work in Wazifas. But he took his photography of nature, and then he would quote from the book, "The Secret of Ecstasy, Yagani Yamugani. Repetition of Al-Ghani, Al-Mughani will serve to activate your realization of a hidden treasure of joy within. Al-Ghani is actually a state of effulgence of Allah in every atom of the universe. This emanation, this effulgence of God, ecstatically flows from the infinite treasure house to all creation." So then he presents a picture that expresses it. Huh? Yagani Yamugani, which is the same root. But we're not going to do that practice. I just was struck by that picture, you know, the effulgence of joy in every aspect of nature, of God's presence, you know. And reminds me of one of the methods of Lord Shiva given in the centering exercises at the conclusion of Zen Flesh, Zen Bones that Murshid Sam gave to all his students to just take one of these and practice it. So I have to tell this story. And I was going to say this Shiva from there. It says, "Consider the plenum, which is to say the fullness of the whole universe within and without, as your own body of bliss." Okay. That's always true. You know, the Upanishads say we have five bodies. The body of food. We're very familiar with that. The body of breath, which is expressed as prana. It's a container that contains the body of food. And then there's the body of mind, manamaya kosh. You can see you got anamaya kosh, pranamaya kosh, manamaya kosh. And so that contains, and then you have the body of cosmic awareness, vijnanamaya kosh. And then you have the most inclusive of all the bodies, Anandamaya Kosh. The body of bliss, Anandamaya Kosh. You know, so we live within, usually we're aware of the body of food. And then, you know, occasionally we get into the body of, you know, the magnetism, the current of life that's carried on the breath. And we're always getting caught in mind, but there is a body of all mind that we need to explore. And then, cosmic understanding and ecstasy. What was it Joe Miller used to say? Something like unendurable ecstasy, indefinitely prolonged. Is that your real state? Well, it can be your real state. But I want to tell this story because I always tell it, and there may be somebody here who hasn't heard it, and otherwise the people that have heard it before need to remember it. And that is, I was in a class with Murshid once in the upstairs room at the Menta Garden, and about 10 minutes into the class, a very disturbed man, who knows what altered state he was in, came into the room, and he pointed at Sam and he says, "God has appointed me to be your spiritual teacher." Well, I don't know what you would do in that circumstance. But he jumped up out of his chair and he said, I accept on one condition. And what is that? He said, you show me one person in this room that God has not appointed to be my spiritual teacher. And then a miracle occurred. The man sobered up. He sat down respectfully, listened to what Murshid had to say, and did the class with us, and quietly departed when it was all over. I thought, wow, you know, I mean, the answer that uproots the question, you know, in the pure Zen manner, you know, the truth from which the divergent point, I'm higher than you, no, you're higher than me, no, I'm higher than me, no, whatever it is. No, everybody, you know, they want to, there's that fear, you know, am I good enough? Well, then the ego says, you're the greatest, you're the man, you know, the grandiosity sets in. But we learn from everybody if we are awakened to it. I want to leave some space today for questions, because I got going yesterday and I didn't get to it, and this is the last time we'll meet together. And so I wanted to, if there are questions on your heart and things that you'd like to bring up, please do so. But don't try and do like we had to do in graduate school. He says, okay, he wants a question, all right, now let me just dredge one up. I don't want any questions, but I do want your questions if they are things that are arising for you. Yes, Louise.
You had, a couple days ago, you talked about the universal outlook, samadrishti, I think it was.
Samadrishti, which is, you know, in usually translated right views. When you say, you know, in the teaching of the Buddhist path, you know, you should cultivate samadrishti. But Mercy Sam always said sama, the very word sama in Sanskrit means universal. Like in the, you know, paragate, parasamgate, you know, gone, beyond gone. You know, when Lamaji spoke about when you drink a glass of water, feel that the whole world is being filled with water. You know that you're
everyone, everywhere.
Everyone, everywhere.
Everything, everywhere.
So you speak to samadrishti, if you will, brother.
Like exercising a muscle, you know. You are not small. You're big. Universe small inside you. So, right now you're listening. Feel everyone everywhere listening. Right now I'm speaking to everyone everywhere, not just to you, non-physical beings, every dimension. Walk through a door. Everyone everywhere, doors opening. Take a step up, stepping closer to the beloved. Everyone everywhere. Taking a bite of food. Not just for your hunger being satisfied, or that contentment or bliss arising in you from being fulfilled, but everyone everywhere. And going to the bathroom, eliminating everyone everywhere, you know? So you just start relaxing into your true nature, which is big. And it, like I said, it's a little bit like a muscle. It, of course, in the beginning, it's a little contrived. You know, it's a little bit your imagination in the beginning. That's okay. Soon, it starts to become your heart feeling. You're feeling your heartbeat right now. You feel the heartbeat of the person next to you, Wally's. 65 miles in that direction, in the Virgo supercluster over there, you know, just start to relax. It's really, when we think of these, if you say, this is all I am, it's such a contraction, you know? Relax. Be your universal self. And as a gesture, you know, you're about to do a practice. Invite all beings in existence to be present with you when you're going to do your zikr. And allow that zikr to reverberate as though everyone, in everyone's heart, everywhere, that zikr's arising. You're practicing a wazifa. Invite all beings in existence to practice with you. If you feel any contraction during your practice, at the end, relax again. You know, allowing that presence to be presence, to be present everywhere.
Thank you. Any other questions? Maybe I can throw some to some of the other wise people here. Yes.
This isn't a question, but this is something I'd like to add to that that's been really valuable for me, is the everyone, everywhere. Of course, it's one way, but also to experience it both ways.
Yeah.
When there's something you can't do, you know, you're seeing this beautiful dancing going on, and your body doesn't have that ability at this particular moment in time or this lifetime, you're dancing. It's a foundation in some ways for sympathetic joy.
Yeah, that's what I was going to add, Aziza, you know, mudita, sympathetic joy. You know, I mean, we get so robbed of joy because when we see someone else that's really happy, often we contract because we say, oh, they're happy and I'm not. Or look at that couple. They really are so intimately together. But what about me? Where's my intimate partner? And then instead of being happy in their happiness, taking joy in their joy and feeling a sharedness about it, you are, you know, that joy becomes a cause for you to contract. And that's also part of what this teaching in relation to the Wazaif and the physicians of the heart, is that's why we have contracted around a sense of self that is so deficient, because when one of the reasons we do that is because when these qualities manifest, such as intimacy and joy and happiness, and if we feel that we're not a part of it, then we say there must be something wrong with me, and we identify with the negative aspect of it, and that becomes an aspect of our notion of ourself, which we need to wipe clear in order to truly be. Anything else on people's heart you want to bring up? Let's do this practice, and then there'll be room for more questions if other people do it. This is a wazifa practice that has to do with both dissolving and reintegrating. Because with each breath, we can offer everything up and dissolve our sense of self. By letting go of everything that is transient, we return to our real home. And this is part of the root meaning of Al-Qudus, the refiner, the purifier. It has one of the root meanings of returning to your real home. And you're returning there by letting go of all that is transient, especially including this idea that you have of who you are that limits you and holds you within this very small container. And so as you are breathing out, Yakudu, you really relax. Stop all clinging dissolve. Let go of everything that is transient. You know, return to your home. You know, you feel the buoyancy of your spirit. It's rather the liberty that they say maybe your soul will experience when you die, you know, that you're letting go of all these trappings, you know. But you're returning to your real home. All this stuff that was transient, you let go of. And so at the end of that exhalation of, and we'll do it first, allow just to kind of gather in the atoms of our being, and then we'll do it on the breath. But at the end, I'm talking about the breath practice because I don't want to have to talk about it when we do it. At that moment when you have really let go of everything that you're capable of letting go in that moment, and you're at the end of that exhalation, then from that place, perhaps even that place of the void, of the if your breath takes you that far, you see, into that luminous voidness of all being, you draw in right into your soul, because your soul is not separate. Your real self is not separate from that reality, but it has become individuated in you. And so now you're going to breathe in Yajami, J-A-M-I with an ayin at the end. So it's Yakudus Yajami. And Jami is the name for integration, synthesis, gathering together, draw. So you draw in whatever is in that space that your breath has left you as you've let go into the reality that your soul embraces as part of its nature. And then as you inhale, you draw that in and you feel an integration of being right here, so that you're right here. You're not just left in this floaty state, you see. You have a body, you have a will, you have a life, you have things to accomplish, and you have qualities to use in that accomplishment. But, you just take a pause at the time when you've drawn it on in and claimed that inheritance to realize, I need to let go again. And you dissolve again in letting go of everything that you're holding on to at that moment and returning to home, letting it all be refined and purified and cleared away. You say, well, transient, that's a word. Well, anything that has a beginning or an end is transient, okay? So let go of everything that has a beginning and an end and return to your home that has no beginning and no end. Any questions about this? We'll do the wazifa, always understanding that the wazifa is the mantra is the body of our prayer. You know, we're praying, which means we're opening, we're letting go of our resistance to being transformed and purified and awakened. We have a lot of resistance to that, maybe because we got wounded by people telling us what was the right thing to do, and they turned out not to be the right thing to do, you know, or whatever woundedness we have around that's created our resistance to it. So we let go of that when we're doing the wazifa. We trust that this is the body of God that is coming to do the alchemy in us, you know, that so we let that, we dissolve as much as we can to let that act in us. Then we take it into the breath, where it's even more subtle, and the atoms are finer, and in order to take our contemplation deeper. So we're just going to say maybe 20 times these names, and then we're going to go as a pair, and then we're going to go into this practice of exhaling Yakudus, relaxing, releasing all transiency, all sense of self, and into our true home, and drawing everything into the ru, into the sense of that ray of the infinite sun that is articulated in our own expression of self. And when we breathe in yajami. Yakudus 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 yajami. Now continuing as we described, exhaling yakudus, inhaling yajami. Let's bring this meditation to a conclusion by blowing the sound "Hu" into our heart for a minute. I have one more copy of this, which I've been reading from. I'll leave it at the bazaar today, if anybody wants to pick it up. But I did mark a couple of things I thought I might read. Here's the thing for my birthday, you know. It's very short. These are the words of Hazrat Inayat Khan. When one dives within, one finds that one's real self is above the perpetual motion of the universe. Murshid Sam comments, strictly speaking, above the mind mesh there is only one self. Call it Atman, Dharmakaya, Ruh, soul, or what you will. It is our aspect of it that gives it a name. Seeing partly from below the mind mesh and partly from above through realization. But the reality in us is nothing but that. So that's something I'm still working on.
Can I ask a question about that? Why wouldn't it be inside and pervading and outside at the same time as opposed to above and below?
Well, above and below is just a way of speaking, meaning in the sense of transcendence and not in the sense of, that which is truly transcendent includes everything. You know, for example, I was speaking of the names. God is the only one who is the cause of life. God is the only one who is the cause of death. These are the relative aspects of how we know life and death, you know. But there's a transcendental name, Yahai, which is ever-living, in which these transient qualities of living and dying that these bodies have that we think are life and death, all are always contained by that. That's never absent. And yet it also transcends all that. That's truly the nature of God. God is absolutely transcendental, beyond our ideas, beyond our notions of anything. We have all these words for it, thatness, suchness, you know, all this stuff, but that's the absolute condition. And yet, nothing is separated from that. It includes everything at the same time. It's transcendent as well as immanent. So thank you for your question. The problem is we use language which is built around a whole conceptual structure of analysis. But many of these original languages like Sanskrit and Hebrew and Arabic, Aramaic, they came in such a way that they bear, within the sound itself a blessing that is that can still be felt. Murshid used to tell the story, told it many times. I think it was 1966 or 7 when after he'd gotten his inner message from God, who said, I make you the spiritual leader of the hippies. So he went to the psychedelic conference in San Francisco, and Ram Dass was there in his incarnation as Richard Alpert before he went to India and got a guru. Timothy Leary was there, and a number of other early practitioners with LSD, and the chief of police was there, and the district attorney was there, and he said, and Leary got up and he said, you know, the things that we've experienced on LSD, there are no names for it. There's no name for it at all. And Alpert got up and said the same thing, and others in that genre got up and said that, and Sam said, and then I got up and I said, there's not a single thing you've experienced that there isn't a name for in Sanskrit. You know, samadhi, you know, all these states, and they all describe, you know, I mean, because from people that name them from the experience, you know. I thought this particular thing, which is a little long, I may not read the whole thing, but it has to do with dealing with the mundane reality in a way so that we can understand what it is that we are engaged with in the world as we see it around us. Here's the saying of Hazrat Inayat Khan. You can have all good things, wealth, friends, kindness, love to give, and love to receive, once you have learned not to be blinded by them. Learn to escape from disappointment and from repugnance at the idea that things are not as you want them to be. You can have all good things, wealth, friends, kindness, love to give, and love to receive, once you have learned not to be blinded by them. Learn to escape from disappointment and from repugnance at the idea that things are not as you want them to be. Merchant Sam writes a rather long commentary on this, and I'll read, and I'll see how much of it I want to read, but I know I want to read the end of it. To begin with, the idea of good things must be altered. Altered not to eliminate what we may call valuable, but rather augmented to include many things we may not call valuable. What we call valuable must have some value, otherwise it would not be prized. The pursuit of wealth is not wrong of itself, but becomes wrong when it displaces higher ideals. The ideal pursuit is an all-inclusive pursuit, which does not neglect the sustenance for body, heart, or soul. So first we must include in the term wealth not only material good, but intellectual gifts and the treasures of the spirit. You know, I don't know how wealthy we are in the bank, but I know we are very wealthy in spirit, in love, and we have in friendship, you know, in this community. And the treasures of the spirit. But besides that, it is important to possess these things and not to be possessed by them. So long as we pursue them, it is only to be possessed by them. But when in our search for the highest we come into temporary possession of goods, then it cannot be said that we possess them, for then God possesses them. So it is with friends. To possess friends, we must understand the highest friendship, and this is only possible with the realization of God. Otherwise, our so-called friends are as possessions which we try to include in our thoughts of ownership until we become owned by these thoughts. And the same is true concerning kindness, the faculty by which and through which friends are attained and maintained. That kindness which is adopted as an affectation is false, and that which is natural, outburst of the heart, is true. And this right attitude in life becomes more than true when we consider love from any standpoint. It is impossible for us to love all unless the spiritual love of God is in our heart. We may use the word love and make claims, but there will be no life in it. And it will fail when the test comes, for it will be centered around the nafs. Use of the word love is very different from the substance love. Therefore, the question arises whether we are blinded by our desires or ideals or whether we control them. When we control them, nothing can either elate us or disappoint us. Both these are forms of intoxication. The former intoxication of ideals by light, the latter intoxication of desires by darkness. And perhaps the latter may sometimes be preferable to the former, which is sometimes so blinding that one cannot easily recover the sight of heart and soul. Finally, we must consider the condition of things. This is the part I really wanted to get to, because people say, why is the world the way it is? See, you know. Finally, we must consider the condition of things as the result of all thoughts of all beings. We cannot control the thoughts of others. We might influence them in part, but God has given willpower to all humankind. Through this, thoughts are formed, and through these thoughts, the material affairs of the world are fixed. The consequence is tremendous, that not only is each individual but one part of billions of people, all of whose thoughts and whose karma is affecting the world, but the influence of the past is still greater. Not only our reverence for people of the past, but constitutions, contracts, and agreements of all sorts bind us. It should be obvious, therefore, that our own small individual wills are as nothing in this whirlpool. And if you add to that the thoughts of plants, animals, and rocks, of the planets and interplanetary forces, of the unfathomed activities in the unseen, even the whole humanity does not appear to be so great compared with the universe. This should teach us true humility. Also, it should teach us resignation. But there is a true and a false resignation. The false is fatalism. The true is not to be bound by any restrictions, to seek freedom by finding full scope for the spirit outside of these material and mental bonds. This in itself will help the world more than anything else. Thus we can become a bodhisattva or nabi. So this is Murshid Sam's point of view. I'd like to say the world is, the nafs blown up large in all its various stages of unfoldment, including a divine perfection and including total blindness to everything but the desires of one's own ego. So it's got that whole range of being, and yet it's all God in stages of sleep and stages of awakening. Any other questions people would like to bring up? Yes.
What number was that?
I don't know. Well, maybe I still have my marker in there. The page number or the thing, I don't know. I'm bad about this. That's why I have people that help. Oh, yeah, here it is. It's from the saying from May 1st, or page 75 of this book. So, anyway, we have about another 10 or 15 minutes for this gathering. And I am... I want to say a few things about the camp. I really like the feeling that the spiritual director brought to the camp this year. She took a chance. She did some new things. She let things happen that were more inclusive, took more chances of seeing, you know. Somebody spoke in the circle this morning about, seeing things that were very awkward and not quite there being done, and understanding they'd be done better later and so on. You take all that chance when you don't just want to keep absolute control and make sure that, you know, let's just leave it in the hands of all the experienced farmers or whatever, you know. Let's, you know, not take any chances with the this or that. And, you know, so I really want to just speak to that. But also I have to say, I want to tell you, this just came to mind, the story. I heard this first from, and I love to tell this story because I identify with it. I heard it from Jiu Kinnet Roshi, who was the first woman to go through all the Zen training in Japan and be ordained as a Zen teacher. She came here and she opened a center in San Francisco, the Zen Mission Society, and then later she started I want to say ashram, but that's not what you call it, but you know, A what? An abbey. Yeah, abbey up at on Mount Shasta. This is not the story I want to tell, but I'll tell you that Sam came back to the house one day. He'd been over when she was living in San Francisco, and he was in a state of absolute ecstasy. I was in there typing in the office, and he came in and he said, "I've just been defeated in a debate." He was just absolutely ecstatic. "I've just been defeated in a debate." And he said, "And you know how she did it?" I said, "No, Marcia, what'd she do?" He said, "She quoted Gilbert and Sullivan." He loved Gilbert and Sullivan. And of course, she was English, and so she probably knew it also. And you'd be driving him around, he'd be singing. Sometimes he'd just break out into arias from Gilbert and Sullivan. And that was kind of picked up in the movie when there was a wedding and he was singing about, "My name is John Wellington Wells. I'm indeed in magic and spells, and and giving beautiful girls away, and one for you and one for thee, but never, never one for me." He said, "Not one, but which is exasperating for a most susceptible chancellor." He was just, he couldn't stop himself. He was effulgent, but the story I wanted to tell has to do with, what I was talking about earlier, just kind of like, what do you do when you're trapped in a situation where it's painful and awkward and you have no way to get out? And one aspect of yourself is saying, be kind and accepting and endure and just go along with it. And the other part of you is saying, I want to get away from here. So this is the story. This is the story she told. With no preface, she just, I was at a meeting with her and she told the story. She said, there was once an abbot from a very awakened being from a monastery in Japan, and his chief disciple, who was also very awakened, and they had taken on this task of going to the temple of whatever it is, 1,000 Buddhas, or I don't know, in Nara, where there's all these hundreds of Buddha statues, and before each one, they would light a stick of incense, and they would say a prayer and bow. Well, they'd been going on for about 15 or 20 minutes doing this, and there was still quite a bit left to do, the chief monk said to the abbot, he said, "All this bowing and scraping makes me want to spit." And the abbot didn't miss a beat. He said, "Very good." He says, "I bow and you spits." It's okay to be a bower or a spitter, because what's the meaning of that story is, don't be weighed down by forms. Don't be, even no matter how good they are, no matter how idealized they are, cut through it, don't just take it in and say, okay, this must be, and it weighs you down. So that's why, this gives you that permission to say, law, none of this, or spit, and being somewhat of a spitter myself, I've always appreciated this story, because then I say, oh, well, it's okay, they bows, I spits, it's the same thing, they're being very kind and resigned and, of self-effacing and accepting and looking for the good behind it all, and I'm seeing, no, cut through it to the core. Anyway, I don't know why I told that story, but...
I was going to ask you to tell it when I had my hand up a minute ago.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
Oh, well, see, there you go. One mind. I mean, we are, it's like the other day they were doing the practices, I went into, or, you know, relating to it in that way. So here we are. You know, we'll break up this mandala, you know, at the end of every thing, you know, you let it all go and it dissolves. You know, they build these sand mandalas, and then what do? Let them go. You know, I mean, you can't cling on to this moment, and yet this moment, what's been awakened in you will always be alive in you. You'll never lose this moment. You'll never lose this time of loving acceptance and connection. And to get back to the theme that I haven't talked too much about, but which the theme of Indra's web, we'll end with the practice in that way. Because we, you know, at the end of that Yakadus Yajamya practice, you know, we were feeling the way in which the divine is incorporated in our very soul. And each one's soul incorporates the divine in a perfect way. And that is the unique perfection of each being. No snowflake is the same. No two souls' embodiment is the same. Everyone brings a perfection. And that perfection in Sufi terminology and the wazifa is your wahid. And eternity in a grain of sand. The perfection hidden within each soul that reflects all perfection. So, and then the name for the all-inclusive unity of God is Ya'ahad. Like I said, in Judaism, it's Echad. So there's a big difference there. And the name, what they said is, in the Quran, there's this wonderful passage which if you can read in the depth of the Quran and not the lousy translations that exist, and we can't get Bilal to do a whole translation because he took 2 years to do the translation of the Fatiha. You know, I mean, he's a slow worker. Where God says, I'll just paraphrase it, in my absolute state, I looked within my heart and saw love written on my heart. So love is an inherent quality of that. And so that's the Rahman. When God becomes self-aware and draws this boundlessness into a point of being of self-awareness, that's the Ahad. And then out of that Ahad comes the Rahman, the love that reaches everything, all every atom, every particle, every being, yourselves included. So let's do this practice. Ya Wahid Ahad Rahman. And then after we do it for a minute or two, we'll do it on the breath. Inhaling Ya Wahid and owning the uniqueness of God within our soul. And holding the breath for a moment, Ahad, you know, feeling that all-pervading unity of oneness that is God is one. There's no two out there. It's all within that. And then from that place, including all beings, you know, breathe out that breath of Rahman to include all. You know, because all are reflected in the perfection of your inner knowing. So we'll just say this for a few moments to get it in our sealed in our awareness, and we'll do another few minutes and then we'll be done. Ya Wahid Ahad Rahman. 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 Ya Wahid
Ahad Rahman. Yahwahid Ahad Rahman. Yahwahid Ahad Rahman. Yahwahid Ahad Rahman. Yahwahid Ahad Rahman.
So now for another 10 breaths. Inhaling Yahwahid, retaining the breath, Ahad, exhaling Rahman. And let's dedicate the merit of whatever is wholesome in our coming together here. All, and we can imagine this is boundless in its value and worth. And we want to dedicate this to all, not just the 200 or so people that have passed through here in the course of this week, to all beings. Let them benefit from this. And we'll offer it generously. May all beings be well. May all beings be happy. With you, may peace ever be with you and with all your relations. Thank you.